Thanks, everybody, and welcome to OSHA Safety Consultation Panel Discussion. Are you ready to ask for help? My name is Matt Stinchfield. I am the safety ambassador for the Brewers Association, and in that role, I travel around the country and speak to state guilds, and I have a lot to do with the educational content that's related to safety at the Brewers Association. And I'll tell you right now, if we don't mention it again later today, that you definitely need to have brewersassociation.org in your bookmarks on all of your devices, because there are a lot of great free resources, free video training programs, and all sorts of things there. And that's constantly evolving, and we're adding to that. A few housekeeping rules before we get started. If you'll silence your mobile devices, appreciate it if you haven't done so already. And also, at the end of the presentation today, if you're using, look us up on your mobile app and then slide down to the bottom of the description of this talk, and you'll see rate this. Thank you. Rate this session, and there's just three simple questions. It takes just an instant to answer it, but we'd value having your feedback on that. So the other thing is we'll take questions. First, we're going to go through a sort of a structured introduction of these folks and what their roles are. I'm going to then ask them some questions about how they interact with each other and what they've gotten out of the process so far. And then we can certainly take questions from you, because I know you have some. We've got microphones over here in aisle one and aisle way over there in aisle four. And if you can make your way to a mic conveniently. Otherwise, if I can hear your question, I'll repeat it and we'll just go from there. These sessions are tape recorded, and we want to make sure we get your questions captured as well as the great answers. So with that, let's get underway. I'll from your left to right, I'll just go down quickly and introduce folks to you, and then we're going to go back and ask more specific questions. I'm just going to give the general name and placement of the individual, and then they're going to tell you a little bit about their role as it pertains to today's subject. John Olcheas from OSHA Region 8 office in Englewood, right nearby here. He's a compliance assistant specialist, which means he's kind of a nice guy at OSHA. But he's got a history of enforcement, so he knows what he's talking about when it comes to OSHA enforcement issues. And John, you want to add a little bit to that? Tell us about yourself.
Sure. Good afternoon, everybody. So my name is John Olcheas, and my contact information is up there. And I would just suggest, especially if you're from Colorado, to get down my email address, because all I do is outreach. I just give out information. I am technically still in the enforcement group of Federal OSHA in Region 8, but my current job, I'm one of the few people with Federal OSHA that doesn't do enforcement. I was a compliance officer for about 10 years or so, and then maybe 3-4 years ago, I transitioned into this outreach role. So please get that down, and I can help you if you're in another region as well and you want information about a regulation or inspection procedures or anything related to OSHA, employee rights, employer rights, that kind of thing. So again, I work out of our regional office, and I just do outreach services. I do a newsletter. I'll come out and talk to groups. I'll come talk to your brewery if you're here in Colorado. What I don't do is what the OSHA consultation does, which is a little bit different than my type of outreach.
Thanks very much, John. Okay, and moving down the line here, we've got a couple of brewers. First, I'd like to introduce to you Matt Eshelman. He's a QA/QC manager / wears the safety hat at Massachusetts's Night Shift Brewing. So tell us a bit about yourself, Matt.
Yeah, good to see everyone. Thanks for coming. My name's Matt, as mentioned, the quality manager at Night Shift Brewing. I've been there for about 5 years, and my background was in chemistry, and so in grad school, they take it very seriously. They train you on proper use of chemicals, how to use compressed cylinders, and then when I started Night Shift, we were very small. I think there were about 10 employees, and just a lot of things that I was trained on in academia started becoming apparent that we weren't doing those things at Night Shift. So just by that, I kind of fell into this role. It wasn't something that I was looking to do, but felt obligated to kind of say something. And so at a small company, if you say something, you kind of own it. So that's kind of how I got into this position.
Great. Thanks, Matt. And beside Matt, we have Nicole Ryman. She's a brewer right here in town at Odd 13 Brewing, and she also happens to be a member of the Brewers Association Safety Subcommittee, which, if you don't know, is a group of about 12 hardworking volunteers who are your peers. Tony McCrimmon right here. I actually have to give a shout out because I see some of my homies here. If you're from the Safety Subcommittee, just stand up for a real quick second. There we go, three of them who you might have seen yesterday in our tag team safety boot camp that we gave. So, Nicole, tell us a little bit about your role at Odd 13.
Hi, guys. I'm Nicole. I've been at Odd 13 for about 4 years now. I'm a shift lead brewer over there, and similarly to Matt, safety kind of landed in my lap. Met Matt at CBC a couple years ago and realized all the hazards that we weren't addressing at the brewery, and was kind of voluntold that that was now my new hat to wear. So it's been a bit of a journey, but the OSHA consultation has definitely helped me along my path. So I'm here excited to tell you guys all that you need to get on it.
Thanks, Nicole. And finally, not last and least here, Corey Stengel, who's visiting today from the state of Oregon. Corey is an OSHA consultant, and let me just be clear on that term. He may or may not work for OSHA as you know it. Depends on the state. In Colorado, OSHA consultation comes from CSU, from Colorado State University. In other states, it might be an OSHA agency division. In Oregon, and we'll get to this differentiation in just a minute, Oregon has its own OSHA program that is run autonomously, and in his role as an OSHA consultant, he goes around, Corey goes around, and offers his expertise to businesses of all types, but often in Oregon, that would be breweries, and he does not issue citations. So, Corey, tell us just a little bit more about your role there.
Thanks, Matt, and thanks for coming to listen to us. Again, my name is Corey Stengel from Bend, Oregon. And when I started consultating with OSHA in Bend, the only brewery we had was Deschutes Brewery, and it was relatively new, less than 5 years old. Now there's over 25 breweries just in Bend proper and the surrounding towns. There's at least one in each town, so it's a huge industry. So it does keep me busy. And asking for a consultation, or actually showing up to see what consultation or OSHA is all about, is a huge step for you folks, and I appreciate that. But what OSHA consultation, as far as Oregon has to offer, is essentially a free, confidential service to help you figure out what you need to do without the fear of getting a ticket. So that's what it boils down to, and we'll get into it a little more on that later.
Thanks, Corey. That's a great overview. Okay, so now let's dig just one level deeper here. I'm going to redirect back down to John there. John, would you tell us a little bit about how OSHA is set up, federal program, states and regions versus a state program?
Yeah, so the OSHA Act that came back, 45, 50 years ago, it enabled the formation of OSHA. And there are two types of OSHA enforcement offices. You have what we call federal-run states and state-planned states. So in a federal state like Colorado, Colorado's a federal state, all of the private industry inspections are going to be done by federal OSHA offices, federal OSHA officers. In a state-run state, it's going to be state employees. So the state has, through the OSHA Act, come up with their own program and put that forth, and it's been accepted. And the state has said, we will do the inspections and the enforcement on private industry. In those states, they can also do public entities like city, state, county governments. Federal OSHA also does the enforcement over federal employers. But as far as the private industry, that is broken up between state-run states and federal-run states. And it's about half and half. I think it's like 26 to 24. So again, Colorado's a federal-run state. And a state like California, if there's anyone from California, is a state-run state. Now, the state-run states have to be at least as stringent as OSHA. So they have to enforce the federal OSHA standards at the very minimum. But they can write their own standards. And if anyone in here is from California, you might have noticed that California is, you know, they're a little bit more progressive than the rest of the country, I think. And they do have a lot of their own standards that they will enforce above and beyond what federal OSHA does.
Thanks. That was a great explanation, John. So for both Nicole and Matt, if you'd get the mics in front of you here, because we'll just freelance it here. The first question I have for you is thinking about OSHA, maybe now and maybe when you first got into the brewing business, what did you think about OSHA enforcement? I mean, did it evoke fear for you, or were you not thinking about it? You were too busy making beer, or, you know, where did OSHA play into your development as a brewer?
An evolving kind of thought process on our end. I frankly didn't think about OSHA much when I was in academia. It was a large bureaucratic institution, so I was just a small employee in that big pool. So I just kind of knew what OSHA was, but nothing beyond that. And then getting to night shift, I will admit, you know, OSHA was definitely something that kind of was a little scary. Just in terms of it seemed very complex, opaque, didn't quite know where to dig in, and then also didn't see what was relevant for breweries versus much larger facilities and or other industries like construction. So there was a significant learning curve there. Over time, we kind of learned about these programs, and frankly, now I have a much warmer perception of OSHA. And frankly, a lot of that was due to the state program. So in Massachusetts, the audits, the consultations are through the Department of Industrial Accidents. And we found out about this consultation through just word of mouth. I think someone was at a party and knew somebody who was in the consultation program. And then we knew of another brewery who went through the program. And in Massachusetts, it's nice, they tie grants to these programs. So if you go through the consultation, they kind of help you apply for grant money for safety training. So that kind of sweetened the pot a little bit and opened the door for us to kind of at least take the next step and say we're willing to kind of open this proverbial Pandora's box to kind of see what are we doing wrong, because we frankly had no idea what was right and wrong other than some basic things.
Thank you. Nicole, what about you? Did you have some an early thought about OSHA, and has it evolved?
It's definitely evolved. When I have a background in manufacturing, and the company that I worked for previously really didn't do things by the books. So, OSHA was this kind of big, scary monster that would come in and tell us that we're not doing anything correctly. So when I got into the brewing industry and they started doing crackdowns in Colorado specifically, everybody was kind of up in arms, a little bit scared about, you know, what that could mean. If they showed up, you know, are we still going to be operating? Are we going to have to change all of our procedures? We ran things very loosey-goosey for a while. During the time that those crackdowns were happening, the BA sent out some information connecting me with CSU, Colorado State University up in Fort Collins, with their OSHA consulting program. And for me, it was a sigh of relief because I had no idea where to start. It was, you know, all of a sudden safety was on my plate and it was the last thing on everybody else's mind. And I just had no idea where to begin. So it for me, it was, like I said, a breath of fresh air. It gave me a chance to kind of sit back and let someone else kind of help guide me through what it was I needed to do. I had a really steep learning curve in front of me, and this was an incredibly helpful experience. Also an opportunity for me to network with some other local resources that have helped me along the way as well. So they're no longer a big scary monster.
So same question, new question to the both of you. If you didn't know about OSHA consultation, where would you start in finding out what your requirements were and where the help was? Where do you go get that help if you didn't know about consultation? Or how do you find out what your requirements are?
My immediate resource was the BA. They have an incredible number of resources online, and then being part of the safety subcommittee helped a lot. But the reality is I wouldn't be nearly where I am now if it wasn't for the consultation program.
Yeah, I'd echo that. I'd say if it was now, obviously the BA would be my first place to look for some resources. I think the safety portion has been really well developed over the last 5 years. 5 years ago, when I first got into the industry, I didn't even really know what the BA was. I had some training prior, so I knew basic chemical procedures. I knew compressed cylinders of gas were really dangerous. Other than that, I had no idea about lockout, tagout, electrical awareness, confined space. So I frankly would have had no idea. I don't know if anyone's tried to read a code of federal regulations, but it is not the most entertaining thing, and frankly will probably put you to sleep. That's I've tried to do that just to kind of be thorough, but it really helps to have experts distill it, make it applicable for the brewing industry, which is what the BA Safety Committee has really done. It's been a great resource.
Thanks, Matt. Okay, so Corey, why don't you get the mic there? Can you try to characterize for us what is it like when a brewery contacts you and asks for help? Because you don't go looking for them, right? Am I right about that?
Well, we do market our services to various associations and industries, but it's like throwing the bait out and waiting for someone to nibble on it. But typically, it'll be up to the company to ask for our services, and what we look for is management's approval or commitment to this process. I ran into a situation once where it's typically a phone call that comes in saying we want to have a OSHA visit, consultation visit, to cover whatever issue that, in this case, it was noise. So I took the information and went out there, and I was met at the front door by a management team essentially saying, what are you doing here, and who called you? And it all ended fine and well, but what happened was an employee who was disgruntled, who was trying to pin a high noise level onto the company and tell them that they're losing their hearing because of it. And it ended up the company was doing all right. Well, I'm rambling. But anyway, after something like that where my boss administration had to get involved with this company's upper management to iron the whole thing out, one of our questions is this blessed by management? Do they want us out? So that phone call with that blessing or approval is the first thing we get. But we do a lot of marketing in Oregon to promote our services and try to get people. A guy in our office ran the numbers, and only 5% of the employees or employers in Oregon have ever used OSHA's consultation program. And I still run into people that didn't even know that OSHA had a consultation program. They hear OSHA and the walls go up. So essentially, it'll be a phone call. There are times when enforcement will visit a site, and they may be on a specific visit, which means they're dealing with only one issue, a complaint or a referral, where that means they're only can address one issue. So say it's in the boiler room, and they beeline to the boiler room and address that issue. But if they see electrical cords or symptomatic things that could be an issue, they may recommend, why don't you get a consultation? That's all I'm going to say. If they see something of a serious nature that could hurt someone right away, they're bound to address that. But our enforcement staff are trained, highly trained, and they can see symptomatic things in the workplace that would key on them encouraging their clients to get a consultation to address the broader issue. And there have been times after a citation has been issued and there's an appeal process before a final ticket's written. During that appeal process, it may be suggested that if you get a consultation, we may reduce the severity of the violations incurred. It's part of the whole bargaining process. So the main way is you guys calling us in, but Oregon does get creative at times.
Very cool. So you mentioned going in on a noise issue. What's in the brewery's control when they ask for consultation? Can they say, we just are worried about noise, or do they say, we don't really know anything about what our requirements are. Can you give us the A to Z? Can it be either?
Yeah, essentially, we'll do what you want. And let me back up. I'm speaking for Oregon OSHA state plan. Oregon does have four federal consultants. They call them 21D because that's the paragraph in the 29 CFR where it talks about OSHA will help you, federal OSHA. And so there's four of those, and I'll tell you the difference a little later, but the state plan will essentially do what you ask. So if you have a specific issue with noise or lockout or a confined space, or you have issues with carbon dioxide, that's all we'll address. If we see something else, we'll encourage that we address that too, but we're not going to make you. The only caveat with this whole OSHA thing is if we're dealing with one issue, say noise, and again, if there's that glaring issue that could cause serious physical harm and or death at any moment, it's kind of, can we go talk about that and deal with that? And if the company says, no, we're not going to mess with that, we're dealing with this, and then we're required to say, please. but if they say, if they tell me to pound sand, we're not going to address that serious issue, then I have to back out, call my boss. My boss will call their boss. They'll try to work it out. And if they can't work it out, the enforcement side will go address that serious issue and in the enforcement manner. But I've been with OSHA almost 30 years, and that scenario has never worked out, but it's kind of in our holster if it ever has to be used. But I can't imagine anyone ever not wanting to fix a serious issue. So back to the question. It could be as simple as a single item. It could be dealing with written programs, how to write a hazard communication program. We're not going to write it for you, but we're going to give you the resources to write it. There's OSHA, and Oregon OSHA has great templates where essentially if you fill in the blanks, you're in compliance with the rule. We encourage you to tailor it to meet your needs. If you want help with managing your safety and health program, we could help you with that. that's a whole series of different visits dealing with the different elements of an effective safety and health program. And or we can spend time going from A to Z in your brewery dealing with everything from the written programs to walking, working surfaces, lockout, tagout, confined space, and the list goes on and on. So to boil it down again, it's what you guys want.
Yeah, thanks very much, Corey. So, John, if you don't mind answering sort of on behalf of maybe outside of just the way Colorado is set up, but in general, it probably would be fair to say that based on some brewers I've spoken to, that there's a concern that, you know, in an OSHA office, there's just a cube farm with a barrier between the consults and the enforcement side, and they all have lunch together. And what sort of comfort level can you give us in terms of how these things are truly separated? And maybe there's something on a policy level that makes sure that there's a distinct line there.
Yeah, there should be a distinct line, but I will tell you that it is kind of all over the place. I started in the Nevada State program. So in that state, we had our enforcement division, you know, in one set of cubicles, and I could throw a piece of paper and hit the consultation people. So I thought that was weird, just a weird setup when I was there. But I will tell you that, you know, there was never really any exchange of information. Enforcement, not that we do, but enforcement, there's nothing that says we can't give information to consultation, because anything that we do in an enforcement inspection, once it's closed, once we're out of there, it is public information. Now, consultation, their stuff is confidential. When they come out and help you, you don't have to share that with us, and they're not going to share that with us. And I never saw that when I was in the state program. Now, being in a federal program here in Colorado, we're very separate, because we're not going to have the same offices, because all the consultation programs, there's one in every state, they're all going to be pretty much, I think, state employees. None of them are federal employees. Well, you have a few in Oregon, but that's actually pretty rare to see those 21D people. We don't have any here in this region that are federal. But there is a big separation there. And consultation does not tell us anything. That is, you know, what I've seen in Nevada and in Colorado is the consultation group, they're very protective of the employers that they work with. They really kind of take you in and, you know, they really are there to help you, and they do not tell us things. And when you get a consultation visit, you are, during the time that the visit is open, that they're actively working with you, you are actually protected from an enforcement visit, not from a complaint or a referral, which we might get into later what those are, but from a typical, what we call programmed inspection, where you're on a list and we've come out to just check you out. You're actually protected from getting that inspection. And there are occasions where we have, here in Colorado, myself included, when I was an inspector, come out to a site and, you know, walked in to do an inspection, and they were like, wait, no, we're working with consultation. We call consultation. All they tell us is, yes, we're working with them, and then we back out of it. So unless it's a complaint or a fatality or some sort of report that we've gotten that there's a serious condition that needs to be addressed. But there is a dividing line, and I can tell you that I've never received, you know, when I was an inspector, never received any kind of information from consultation. Corey was talking about how, you know, if you don't do what you're supposed to do, eventually they have to turn you in to us. I've been working between state and federal OSHA with them for 13 years. I've only heard of that happening one time. It happened recently in Colorado. And that was just because, I mean, they gave the employer extension after extension, and it was a very serious hazard. And the employer was just like, no, I'm not going to do it. So they, at some point, they have to turn you in. But they, they work with you. You know, that's the feedback I've gotten. That's what, and in my new role, I do have some contact with the consultation people. They still don't, they still can't really tell me anything about what they're doing. Nor do I care, and I don't ask, but
So thanks for answering my next question, John, which is what happens if OSHA shows up and you're in a consultation? So, and notifying those inspectors that you're in the middle of an open consultation is very important to you at that point.
Yeah, and I think that that's something that consultation, when they come out to you, they're going to explain a lot of things. And one of those things is the protection that you're afforded by being with them and working with them. So, yeah, definitely, you know, there have been instances, not in my experience, but others who have gone out, conducted an inspection, and then the employer told them, oh, well, we're working with consultation, but they were, you know, sometimes employers will, and very understandably, be a little bit afraid or, you know, kind of deer in the headlights when OSHA comes knocking, and maybe don't come forward with all the information that they should. But if you're working with consultation, yeah, definitely tell us. Again, if it's a complaint, a referral, some report that we've received that there's some dangerous condition out there, we will have to address that. But we will just address that. We won't be doing some kind of comprehensive inspection. And I do have experience with that as well. I came out on a site. It was a complaint, fall hazard. There were two consultants out there on the site that day. I invited them into what we call an opening conference where I explained why I was there. And I think the company felt actually pretty good that they had these two guys here to kind of watch me and make sure I didn't step out of line, which they did do, you know. Not that I was going to step out of line, but they will do that kind of thing. So, again, all I've heard about the consultation program here in Colorado is good things. I know that they are backed up and they are way behind, you know. If you want them to come out this December, you better call them today. And that may be a bit of an exaggeration, but they're a great service. They really go to bat for their employers.
Thanks. Yeah, the last time I spoke with OSHA Consultation, now they're consulting for all different businesses, not just breweries, but they said they had about 110 businesses on their wait list. For a quick question for Corey and John together, and then I want to talk to our brewers again. Is there a standard length of time from an OSHA consultation to the what you need to do to have it resolved, right? There's a window of opportunity there, and if you're getting things done in the time that's allotted, is it 30 days, is it 60 days, and is that a malleable date? How does that work?
I better let Corey answer that.
Okay. In our program, we mirror what the enforcement side does. We'll rate them as a serious or other than serious, and serious is something that can cause serious physical harm and or death. And we ask that those be corrected as soon as you can. Other than serious, there's a length of time around 60 days. And with Oregon state-run program, it's the only program in the nation that, to kind of go back on that, it's the only state-run program in the nation that does not require verification of correction, with the exception of our four federally funded consultants. They are state employees, but we get money from the feds to support their positions, and they get to fill out all that extra paperwork. But if they identify something that is a serious hazard, and they are required to follow up on what you guys are going to do to fix that, either put a guard around it, eliminate exposure somehow, replace the issue, and it could be as simple as they found a chain and sprocket unguarded, exposed electrical, something that's really easily fixed, or could be something an involved part of your process where it may take some time and capital to actually fix. That's where those extensions come in that were talked about, and as long as you're communicating and you're showing good faith effort, OSHA's willing to work with you. You hear a lot of, I'm going to put the hammer down, and again, that's only when they have to. So.
Thanks, Corey. Great. Good to know. So to Nicole and Matt, in your particular experiences with consultations that you have had in your states, how did you have to get things done? You don't have to go into anything specific about maybe the hazards you addressed, but how did you let the consultants know that you had achieved the goal? And if you didn't do it in the time that was allotted, how did you talk about extending that time?
For us, we had a deadline. So, you know, I think it was 3 months that we had to fix all of our hazards. So I obviously prioritized the more severe of the hazards. And then there were a couple that, you know, especially training is definitely an ongoing process. So I'm just in constant connection with the people that helped us out, letting them know, you know, where we're at with everything. They've actually come back and done some training with our management team. But yeah, it's really just an open communication with them. It was kind of an honor system thing. You know, I just sent them back. I was like, yep, I did all that. Thanks.
So you're on most things, your feedback was, yep, we did it. You sent them an email or something, mm-hmm. and then you figured we're good to go.
It was actually a document that I filled out, you know, saying how I address the hazards, how I expect to implement it over time, and how I'm going to follow up, you know, within the next year.
And that was a form they provided for you?
Yep.
Very good. Matt, how about you? How do you resolve with consultation?
Yeah, it was, it was a very similar process as Nicole just mentioned. We had, depending on the severity of the issue, we had different deadlines, 30, 60, 90 days. We were able to ask for extensions if they were very capital intensive or more involved processes, but we didn't really encounter anything like that. But it was made clear to us by our consultant that we could, you know, extend if we needed to. Frankly, I just wanted to get it over with. So the ones that we could, we were able to kind of just get them done as quickly as possible. And then to verify that we did it, it was very similar. They gave us a form. We filled out the form. I did send some pictures where pictures would be helpful. Other things that were more like training or documentation, I would send them the documents. And then the training, we would send training attendance sheets. But they didn't really ask for that. I just felt like that was kind of good due diligence on our part to have some paperwork to support what we did.
And back to you two again. Did you ask for targeted consultation help on a specific issue, or more like throw your hands up and say, help me in any way, we need it?
I definitely threw my hands up in the air.
Yeah,
I need all the help I could get.
Same here. I knew there were certain areas that I knew we were having trouble with, so I asked him to pay particular attention to those. But when he came in and said, do you want me to just focus on certain areas, I said, you know, frankly, we're an open book. We're here to learn, and our priority is to make this place as safe as possible. So I felt no need to kind of just say, don't look over there, because the point was to make the place safe so that everyone, frankly, everyone that we work with, they're like family at this point. We've been there for a long time together. So it seemed weird to say, don't worry about that sketchy area.
Is there a point now that you say, since we've had consultation and we've completed those to-do items, we're done, phew, you know? Or has it done something to change your safety DNA that you're now thinking ahead and being more proactive? Has it changed the culture in your business?
Without a doubt. There really wasn't much of a safety culture, particularly at our brewery. And so it's... We involved the entire team, at least in the production facility, and so everybody was made aware of everything that was happening, aware of the risks that they're taking every day that they walk into the brewery, which I think was the biggest thing, was just understanding what it is we were doing every day of our lives, and the severity of a lot of those hazards.
Yeah, I think the story is probably similar. Night shift was started by a bunch of homebrewers, and then when you get to a 5-barrel system, the hazards are different than when you get to a 20-barrel system. And so just, you know, our knowledge didn't grow at the pace of our production. And so that was really the kind of situation that I got introduced to. So frankly, it was there was really no safety culture when I got there. It was, let's just make as much beer as we possibly can, as quickly as we can. Sure, we want it to taste good, but, you know, the safety was an afterthought. And it wasn't out of malice. It was more just kind of not being aware that brewery is really manufacturing, especially when you get to larger scales. Now we've seen a big change. We implement training when employees are onboarded. We actually have a somewhat of a defined onboarding process, which we never did. So we try and set the standard for new employees. And then we have some legacy employees who, again, were homebrewers, and now after 5 years of this have kind of come to the point where they, like, they'll call me out if I'm doing something wrong. So that's kind of what you want to see. We're not perfect. We still have many things that we can tackle, but there's engagement from multiple people throughout the organization, not just me just complaining to my coworkers.
Okay, I've got one more question for these two, and then we're going to open it up to questions from you all today. So if you have a question, you've been burning a hole in your brain, you can make your way to one of the microphones. So I guess the real big question for our brewers here is, would you have done it any differently than you did?
I don't think I would have. Maybe I would have done it earlier. But no, it was a pretty seamless process. Everybody wanted to be involved, which is great. But no, I don't think I would change anything at all.
Yeah, same here. I would echo that. I would have probably done it a little earlier had I known about the program. We've in fact done it twice now. We're looking forward to doing it again for a third year in a row. Massachusetts will allow you to come and do it multiple years. And they'll even do noise audits, VOC audits, dust audits. So we view that as like a free resource. We don't have to pay an expensive consultant to come in and test how loud it is at our packaging line. We can just use one visit to kind of determine what's going on. So, definitely would do it again.
Very good. do we have a question coming? Yes, we do. Okay, great.
Just a question mostly for the brewers from a practical standpoint. How much labor actually went into the consultation process and the remediation? And then how much of your weekly time is dedicated to safety? I know you're obviously wearing a lot of hats, and I'm just kind of curious.
It was a pretty quick 3 months for us. It was basically every extra moment of time that we had was dedicated to trying to fix some of these hazards. Generally speaking, for the team, I don't think they really were involved too much, but I definitely stepped back and I dedicated probably about a quarter of my time to this consultation process. Currently, I probably do a few hours a week, which is not nearly enough. I would prefer to dedicate at least one solid day every week to safety, but we're getting there one little piece at a time. But overall, I don't think it was a big time suck by any means, and it certainly was worth every minute of our effort.
Yeah, there's really never enough time for everything. In general, the biggest time-consuming thing for us, we're getting some written safety programs, and that really just required me to kind of go to a quiet place and find some templates and to sit down and write. It gets less and less time-consuming as we've gone on because I've got more and more engagement from other people on the team, which has been a huge help. So I would say, there was a big initial upfront investment. I can't quantify the hours, but it was a good amount. And then every year it gets a little bit simpler, and you want to review your policies. You want to continue to train people. As we've gotten larger, we have a little bit of a budget for this now, which has made things a little bit easier. But even when you're small, it takes a few hours to write a program and to refine it. But it's nothing outrageous. It's really manageable if you just break it into chunks.
Thank you both. Next question?
Yeah. So I actually have two questions, if you don't mind. So John, Corey, quick question. So obviously OSHA being a federally funded program, we got the federal run and then the state-run programs for consultation. On the state programs, are there any kind of state codes or guidelines that are also addressed at that same time, or is it just strictly from the federal OSHA guidelines?
Well, the state programs have to meet or exceed the federal rules. Like in Oregon, we have a whole thick rule on forest activities, and we're the only state that has that. So, and Oregon has some extra rules on safety committees where every employer has to have some kind of a safety meeting or safety committees. So I can't speak for the other states, but most, I'll say 98% of our rules, with the exception of the forestry one, are federal rules. And there's a few intermittent that expound on some of the federal rules that make them easier to enforce.
And that's something that you as a consultant would address, is that like beyond the federal standard that you'd know within your particular state, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
And let me make sure I understand your question correctly. Were you implying that, you know, do they go beyond OSHA's boundaries, say, to FDA or something?
Well, no, not necessarily FDA, but still focusing on from the safety aspect. But like you say, that the state is required to hit federal guidelines or above. And I'm just talking about that gap, that if they do go, if there's anything that's above, so if the state requires something above what the feds require, that the consultant would also potentially be addressing that in those particular states.
Yep. And I guess another way to put it, OSHA has this general duty clause, which the federal side uses a lot when they can't pinpoint an exact rule. All workplaces will be free from hazard. Spout it off. But
create a safe and healthful workplace.
Yeah. And make everything safe, essentially. And like in Oregon, they've added rules to minimize the use of the general duty clause, where they have they'll address the specific issues. Because in Oregon, we don't hardly ever use the general duty clause. Okay. So the same things are getting addressed, but with different rules.
Okay. And just from my experience with Nevada, they had a few extra standards written up beyond the federal, and I know that our consultants there, they did address those as well. But a state like California, I'm sure those consultants are busy doing a lot of work on, making sure that you're in compliance with all those extra standards that go above and beyond, because that's what they're there to do. They're there to, first off, make sure that you have a safe and healthy working environment, but also make sure that you don't get, citations when OSHA comes out. So if there's standards that are applicable in that state that are above and beyond OSHA, you got to do it. And then, as Corey mentioned, the general duty clause, which says that every employer has to provide a safe and healthy working environment free from recognized hazards, that's another thing. It's just a very ambiguous standard that allows us, because you can't write a standard about every single thing, every single possible hazard that could hurt someone out there. So we do rely on some consensus standards and things like that that are out there where, if you've got some piece of equipment, there's no OSHA standard on it, but the manufacturer's manual says to do this safely, you must operate it this way and do these things. We could write a citation because you didn't follow the standard, which is the manufacturer's standard, but it's the only standard that exists there. So the consultants will probably look at that kind of thing too and advise you on that. So it's not, the federal standard is a baseline, but there is stuff that they're going to look at above and beyond that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, John. And the second part, did we get you?
The second one would be, are there any kind of hot button items that you usually find in the brewery environment? Kind of top five, like chemical machine guards or something for us to pay attention to?
Walking working surfaces, it's always a big one. Confined space entry, lockout tagout, which includes hot water above 180 degrees or in that area. That's three.
HAZCOM.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
HAZCOM.
Written, yeah. Chemical management, like hazard communication, and industrial lift trucks. It's hard to.
I know it's kind of a big question. But
yeah,
that's a pretty good list of place to start.
Here in Colorado, we have an emphasis program where we are going out and doing inspections currently of beverage manufacturing. A lot of the people that are going to show up on that list are breweries, and we do have some data. If you want to send me an email, I can send you a list. It's got that and just of the things that we cite most often. You can also go to OSHA.gov. You can put in, if you know what a NAICS code is, and if you don't, you can send me an email. But if you put in your NAICS code, it will show you exactly what OSHA cites in your industry when they come out to do that. So you can run it for like a year, and it'll show you every time OSHA goes to a brewery, these are the most cited things. So a lot of those are what they talked about. You know, sometimes noise can be an issue. If you're really big, process safety management is an issue, but probably doesn't affect anyone in this room.
No, probably not. We've got time for two quick questions. Thanks for those. Those were great. And we'll try to work through these pretty quickly. We've got about 4 minutes left.
Thank you for everybody for doing this talk, by the way. I got a question that for John and Corey. I think it's going to touch on a couple elements that you brought up, state versus federal, and also the barrier between consult and enforcement. Basically, the gist of what I'm curious about is how much room is there to erode that barrier in a state plan OSHA?
I would say it depends on the state, but you know, again, my experience, and I actually have done some work in other states as part of federal OSHA, gone to do audits of other state programs. So I've done them in Utah, Wyoming, and Hawaii. And, you know, they're all kind of different in terms of, you know, because the state comes up with their own program. OSHA signs off on it. And then we do some auditing, some oversight. But I would say generally, there's not any reason for there to be an erosion there. And, you know, I think that, I mean, it's just not something that I've seen. I don't know why the two sides would you know, share information. They really shouldn't. So,
if you don't mind me chiming in on that, I would suggest talking to your brewery colleagues in your state Brewers Guild and fishing around and seeing who might have had a consult in your state and what their level of confidence with the separation is. And that might be the best way to get a state-specific answer on that.
And I would also say that there'd be some serious consequences if somebody from consultation started feeding enforcement information and that came to light. I mean, that would be a very serious issue.
Thank you. Good question. Yes, sir.
I just a question. I was looking for some resources. I'm an architect, and I work in designing the breweries and the plant development. So most of the regulations we found are more about the procedural aspects or construction aspects. So I didn't know if there's any sort of clearinghouse or place that would directly more towards specific design things like slip and fall, you know, mitigation, handrails, walkways. I've been on the page for the code, and it's laborious.
Yeah, you know, as was mentioned earlier, reading the CFR is, you know, if you can't get to sleep tonight, I would advise it. But and especially if you're not used to reading it, if you're not an OSHA inspector, if you're not a safety professional, you know, at first it can be really difficult. But OSHA's website, and I don't know how much you've gone onto our site, there's an A to Z index up at the top.
Yep.
That is a lot better than trying to read the standards, because there's a lot of plain language information on there, guidance documents, things like that. If you send me an email and you ask for specific information, I will send you as much as I can find on those particular issues. But it is tough, you know, if you're new to the safety field, because there's all these standards, and it's not like you can say, oh, brewery, here's the brewery standard. No, I mean, there's very few standards that are specific to an industry. So you have to figure out what under all, and, you know, there's a part of this that applies to me, a part of this, a part of this. And then there's construction standards versus general industry standards and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of information out there. It can be difficult to wade through it, I think. And, again, I would advise anyone in the room, get my contact information and contact me or contact your OSHA consultation program.
And both the state programs and federal programs have fact sheets or quick facts. They essentially boil down the rule to a one or two pages that give you a lot of that pertinent information, like rail height, stair.
Would a consultation process be available for something in design? So that we could submit plans or have a sit down with somebody for something that doesn't exist yet? Or is that out of, that's out of.
I've done that before, but yeah, and well, we do a lot of stuff in Oregon. I would say yes, because the end result is safety. So I wouldn't see why not.
Thank you very much, folks. Listen, final reminder to rate us on the app, and I want to give a great big round of applause to our distinguished panel. Thank you very much.